Yeah, specifically like IPAN or TSIM, actually. So let's just say for a second you knew the person or you didn't know the person, right? Well, certain questions that you're going to be asking are not going to be answered in an honest fashion because either the subject will not feel comfortable with the trashy answer or because certain observations can't always be made by oneself. Thus, the solution, of course, is to observe that person in their natural environment, right? And this will lead you to better questions, and in turn, you can lead to models that are more effective, and therefore, you can apply for use in other people, because essentially what you're trying to do is extract those wonderful qualities and leave out everything else. So basically what we'd like to do here is some sort of truth maintenance, if you will. And basically, the truth maintenance comes in by observing them in their natural habitat, as it were. And at the same time as observing them in their natural habitat, you'd probably want to, in some way, shape, or form, not let them know that you're observing them. For instance, it would be difficult to take someone from the audience here and convince them of several different things just based solely on the fact that they know that my speech is about convincing things and reading people and modeling people. So if they're voluntary about it, it might not be completely honest. And this is where the profiling comes in, where you want to be able to read someone from a distance, or perhaps you want to be able to read someone that you're very close to that you think is not necessarily always honest. So a really important part of NLP also is presupposition, right? With the use of presuppositions, you're able to give suggestions that will lead the subject to your conversation direction that you'd like to go in. Say the sentence, and as you were saying, cheers, now drink up, and handing a person a drink, and then having them mimic the drinking motion that you are doing, say, last two nights ago or something along those lines. There's a guy in the hallway, and we were having a beer. He was really, really drunk, and he was telling me he just couldn't possibly drink anymore. And it was funny because I asked him to hold a cup of absinthe for me, and he said, no problem, I'll hold this cup of absinthe, but there's just no way that I could possibly drink it. I mean, I'm absolutely against drinking this absinthe. I've had way too much to drink already tonight. I can barely even see. I can hardly walk. And I was like, all right, I understand. No peer pressure whatsoever. And I was just having fun with the guy because, well, he was annoying me. And I was trying to write this really well-written speech, and as you can say, he clearly distracted me. So I said, cheers, you know, smiled, gave him a pat on the shoulder. I was affirming that, in fact, what I wanted him to do would be in his best interest, that he would be content in some way, shape, or form with doing exactly what it is that I want, but without him realizing that I'm doing this. So I made the presupposition that the happy friend of mine would be holding my drink, right? And then I made another presupposition with my body language that in fact, it was nice of him to say cheers to me. And absolutely, cheers right back at you, even though he didn't remember saying this, of course. Cheers, clink glasses, and down it. And so he drank a half a glass of absinthe, right? Right? And so there's a good example of, you know, NLP at work, right? Anyway, so it's pretty conducive to be able to use your body language effectively like that, because that's an example where linguistics wouldn't have really been able to do it on its own, where there's someone who's so vehemently opposed to a certain thing. You know, when you say, have a drink, they really don't want a drink, but you know that they want that Rohypnol, right? So just say for a second they're vehemently opposed to it. They're putting up this wall, and they're saying to you, no, I don't want it. No, just stop saying that. So, of course, the best line of attack is to go around the wall and is to give it to them in such a way that you lead them into a motion where they will continue the motion, where you will lead them into doing something. For instance, if you were to call up tech support and, you know, be disconnected, right? Yeah, I was just talking to such and such and this and that. I just confirmed all this stuff, and I just wanted to make sure that I got my password correctly. He read it off as so-and-so and such and these characters, but my phone was breaking up and I'm driving through the desert right now and, well, you know, I need my password because once I get to this hotel, I'm only going to be able to dial up in this way, shape, or form, and so on and so forth. And you give the presupposition that you've already called up. You've already authenticated that you in some way, shape, or form really are a valid user, right? So it can be useful for that as well. Of course, these aren't exactly the successful modeling techniques, but rather just the ability to do a cold read on someone, the ability to just look at someone and to know that, for instance, if you were to see a Klansman, you'd probably know that if you're Jewish, you shouldn't be near that guy, right? I mean, there are certain things that are obvious, and then there are certain things that are not obvious, like if you were to come to the yak.net room for the hot tub, right? Maybe you didn't know that there was no yak.net hot tub. But you never know. Some people bought it. Some people didn't. So, but I assure you, they were all naked. So, they were. They really were. The police were hassling them. You can't be naked in the pool. And I said, hey, you guys, I know where there's a place without any police at all. It's that guy, actually. Something about, you've never seen attractive women. If they were attractive, I wouldn't harass them to get out of the pool. Okay, so I said, come on now, come with me. I know where there's a great pool, right? It's awesome. There's a hot tub in the Yak Room. I mean, the bathtub has jets, right? So a hot tub, maybe, of some sort. So anyway, convincing them in some way, shape, or form that you really have something that they want, that in some way you can give it to them. When in fact, as long as what you want is going to be had before they realize you're duping them, it can be effective. So anyway, a really important thing to neurolinguistic programming, which I think is actually probably like the fourth most important thing to neurolinguistic programming, is eye patterns. It's also one of the most controversial discoveries with relation to NLP, because a lot of people think that it's not necessarily a good thing to base it on, because if you're left-handed, it can be reversed. If you're ambidextrous, you know, you're somewhere in between. Apparently, if you're from a certain country in South Africa, it's reversed regardless of which side your hand is on, and so on and so forth, right? So the micro-movement of the eye, though, is generally unconscious. If I were to tell you something and you thought it was bullshit, perhaps you'd dart your eye in a certain direction, right? If perhaps you had the feelings of absolute hatred for me, perhaps angst, you might look down and to the right and you might think, you know, you were kind of sad. I mean, I'm sure that you've associated these things with people before, right? When you have a conversation with them and you notice the direction that they hang their head, the direction in which their eyes move, how they droop their hands, how they tip their hat, so on and so forth. So just as a general refresher on here, if your eyes are up and to the left, that's the non-dominant hemisphere visualization. In other words, things that you're trying to remember, right? So when you're talking to a police officer and he says, do you work at this company? And who is your boss? You probably, since many police officers are trained with micro eye movement patterns, you probably want to look up and to the left because you'd be accessing memory. It would probably be a very, very bad idea, however, to look over and look at the creative section and start talking about, say, oh, my boss is so-and-so, and because if they are trained, and many are, they're going to know you're totally full of shit. And you're going to get in a lot of trouble, and it's happened to a lot of people. And you need to be able to lie with your entire body. So you have to be conscious of things that are so minuscule as your eye patterns. So it's really important to be able to control that, however. So up and to the right is the dominant hemisphere of visualization. In other words, constructed imagery, visual, you know, fantasy. So you'd be thinking to yourself, yes, my boss is... Yes, it's Doctor Who, right? Maybe that wouldn't work so well if they were actually trained, because they'd know that you're full of shit. And some people would and some people wouldn't. But what you can also pick up on this is when you're talking to someone and they look up and to the right, you know that they are full of shit, generally. And it's true, and it works. Ask a good friend of yours something after the talk, something you know is absolutely untrue in some way, shape, or form, and see how they answer. Get them to try and lie about it, but catch them off guard, right? So that they know what they're supposed to say, but their body doesn't always respond in the correct manner. So if your eyes are laterally left, it's the non-dominant hemisphere for audio processing. You know, remembering sounds, words, tape loops, tonal discrimination, stuff like that. If your eyes are lateral to the right, it's the dominant hemisphere audio processing for remembered sounds and words, right? Or rather, remembered sounds and words. So if your eyes are down and to the left, it's internal dialogue, right? Generally, when you're talking to yourself, you're thinking like, oh shit, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? If you really want to mess with people that are reading into this, change this around. Do not follow these default patterns. These are well-known patterns. And if you can change these, and people are reading them, they'll throw you off. Business people, if you sell products to someone in some way, shape, or form, it's good to know specifically which patterns people are looking for, because these patterns are taught at business seminars, which I'm not really going to get into, but I think that seminars are kind of a waste of time. And if you pay for it, you're wasting your money. Nothing you can't find in a book, talk to someone who's actually wasted money on, etc. So you probably want to change those around. I highly recommend, if you're changing them around, though, to be constant, because you want to be able to make it so that when you are doing your eye patterns, people don't realize that you're messing with them, because it's important to keep this cover. If you don't have this entire alternate identity of the self that is subconscious when people are reading into it, like I said, they're going to be not fooled in any way, shape, or form. They're going to know that you're lying to them, and they're going to be able to know that you are manipulating them. And even if they don't know about NLP, they might just be intuitive, because these things aren't so difficult. I mean, when you're lying, some people get that smile, you know, they get a little red-faced. They sort of slip up in their talk, you know, the tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. And anyway, so eyes down and to the right. I think this is a good one, because it's one that most people are familiar with. Feelings, right? It's something that everybody in here, unless you're the most cold-hearted of person, will feel, right? So when you're talking with someone about how they feel about something, like in some way you're talking to someone about a traumatic experience, and you don't necessarily believe they had this traumatic experience, perhaps the correct thing to do would be to watch their eyes and to see if, when talking about this, they're looking into the remembered imagery of up and to the left, and if they're also looking down and to the right because they remember actually feeling this pain, right? Because, like I said, if they're, of course, looking up and to the right and they're not wavering from that, really, other than to look right back at you, you probably know that they're lying to you. So if they're looking straight ahead but they're defocused, you've got dilated eyes perhaps, it's pretty much access to almost any sensory information, but it's usually visual, obviously, because you're looking right at something, right? So one of the things that's interesting about that, of course, is that most people, when they're trying to control their eye patterns, is they just look straight ahead, which, although that is effective, it isn't necessarily the correct thing to do, because by looking straight ahead and not having these eye patterns be present, if someone is paying attention to them, they may begin to pick up on the fact that you are not being honest, either with yourself or with them. So basically, these patterns hold true, as I said, for the Western Hemisphere and people who are right-handed. I mean, that's where most of the extensive studies have been done, as where left-handed people tend to be mirror images of those that are right-handed, which I'm sure some of you have noticed, you know, the eye patterns would be different for those people, and so on for everyone else in between, as I've already said. Right? So depending on the orientation of the person, whether or not they're oriented in some direction, more of a physical, more of an emotional orientation, they might access certain parts of their brain more frequently than that of someone who is in some way more associated with, say, emotions as opposed to physical contact, right? And so those people are going to mislead you, maybe not even intentionally, because they're going to be talking about basically one thing, and you'll think that they're in some way, shape, or form accessing memory imagery, but in fact, they might just be dominant about always thinking about this type of the past. They're always thinking of the past, and it's important, of course, to remember that if this is so, that you can't always be able to read someone right off the bat, because they might be more dominant, and pretty much everybody is more dominant. Yes? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So once you become more comfortable with your ability to read someone's eye patterns, you can begin to adapt questions which will elicit certain verbal responses. And they're socially dictated, but they also might elicit an unconscious twitch, you know, a little bit of hatred, you know. So it depends, you know. Just a dart of the eyes is enough to be able to tell something about someone, because they're slipping up. not necessarily always, but it does happen, and you can read people, and when you're reading them, you'll be able to gain insight into them. But you have to, in some way, shape, or form, trick them in order to do it. So it's really important when you're making a deal with someone, I'm sure you realize, right, is to be able to read their underlying thought process, because you want to know if he's really going to go 20 bucks lower or something along those lines. So you want to be able to read their eye patterns once again, because this is going to lead to that. So anyway, if you want to find someone's primary representation of what that particular model that they stand for, be it visual or physical, ask them something like, what do you highly value? What is really important to you? And when they go to answer, the direction that their eyes will dart is generally, and not always, but it is generally the one that in some way relates to them at the inner core of their being. So anyway, when a police officer is asking you a question, be sure to look to your left, assuming you're right-handed, as this would dictate to the officer that you're accessing memory, right? You want to remember what actually happened. You know, if you are in some way, shape, or form talking about something that happened to you truthfully and how they might really feel, you want to be looking to the left, upper left. You want to be looking down for your emotions, to the down right area. So it's important to keep these things straight, because if you don't keep them straight, people will know that there's either something wrong or you're duping them. So anyway, that pretty much wraps it up for my terribly written speech. Any questions? One. Yes. No. I actually wouldn't recommend any good books, because that would be bias on my part. Can you recommend any good books? I personally think that I'm not qualified to recommend books, because I would mislead you. I'm just going to... Yeah. No. However, I know you're qualified on this. Yeah. What books would you recommend? Could you say that louder? All right. So any other questions at all? I believe what she was saying was specifically the two people that started NLP, correct? Where did she go? Okay. Books by Bandler or Grinder, correct? Yes, that's what I thought. Obviously, since they're the founders of it. But there are lots of subjective techniques that other people have come out with over the years, and they'll sell it to you. But ultimately, most of those courses are just money-grubbing capitalists trying to sell you something that's pretty obvious and easy to find out. Although, some people would disagree with this, and that's based solely on the fact they've spent a lot of money on these courses, and you never know. So anyway, that's that.